David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 374. I'm your fleshy, bloody host, Steve Raker, back from 2 week-long beach vacations and a 9-day tent camping trip that took up the second half of my summer. But it's good to be back in the head chair, ready to call another podcast gathering to order. Kevin and Andrew will be on in a few minutes to join me in catching up and discussing the books we've read since we last talked over 6 weeks ago. But first, I should say that Marvel Noise is a semi-monthly podcast covering all things Marvel, with a particular fascination with and love for the Bronze Age that is proudly sponsored by nobody. You can find, listen to, and stream... and download episodes past and present over on MarvelNoise.com. There's that handy little drop-down calendar-style menu on the right-hand side to bring up past months and years. Get new episode announcements, see images and cover galleries on our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find other fine podcasts from our supremely intelligent, thankfully benevolent host, Derek Howard, and the Deliberate Noise Network, including Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk indie comics. Item, the Baltimore Comic-Con is still coming. They're a longtime friend of this podcast. The Baltimore Comic-Con is a comic-centered show full of fantastic guests and artists. It's just a giant artist's alley, true believers, and it's back at the Baltimore Convention Center in the Inner Harbor Tourist Trap Zone of Baltimore for 2021 on October 22, 23, and 24. You can see the already substantial guest list and get tickets and other information at BaltimoreComicCon.com. See you and your fashionable choice of masks in Baltimore. All right, before I bring the guys on, it's become customary for me to share at least one recent read, so here goes. Deadpool Black, White, and Blood number 1 was a fantastic oversized issue with 3 great 10-page tales. The first is by Tom Taylor and Phil Noto, where Deadpool teams up with the honey badger, Gabby, to take down zombified zebras, which is just ripe for black, white, and red jokes, right? The second story is by Ed Brisson and Image founder Wils Portacio, where Deadpool goes on an international quest for a VHS copy of a movie that he can't find anywhere available to stream. But the third 10-pager is what made the book for me. With story and art by James Stokoe, through Deadpool, find Omega Red having set up and fortified a Soviet-like autonomous zone out in the wilds of Canada. Deadpool is a welcome visitor, but the Russians send Ursa Major and a squadron of soldiers to take down Omega Red. It's page after page of hilarious dialogue and just amazing art, right? I really love this one. All right, I'm on a roll. Let's bring in WWX Kevin and Andrew the L.A. Rabbit. Oh, hey guys, it has been, it feels like it's been months, but it actually has been over a month since we've talked last because of me being on my vacays and stuff. How you guys doing?
I have my suit on, I have my foot on the table, and I'm holding a stack of comics.
That's what I call getting ready to fire out of the gates.
I don't have any clever descriptions. I'm just here.
Yay! That's all I require of you, Andrew. You know, I thought I was going to read so much over vacation, right? I did 2 beach vacations and a 9-day tent camping vacation. And man, I just ended up being so busy doing stuff and surviving and helping those around me survive that and be comfortable that I did very little. But I'll tell you, the one thing I did read that was sort of comic related is I wanted to have something disposable. I guess that's the wrong word, but we associate it with the way comics used to be thought of, right? But like something prose that I could bring actually like to the beach and allow to get a little sandy or wet, and I'm not gonna, you know, bring a nice coffee table comic related type book or something, or even comics themselves, into that environment. But I read some of, although I bought all three volumes of Roy Thomas's A Barbarian Life. Have you heard of these? I think they're like print to order through Amazon, like they print them up when you order them kind of a thing.
Weird.
But they are issue by issue essays on his entire run of Conan the Barbarian back in the 70s.
Wow.
When they were all reprinted in Europe, the company doing the reprints asked him to write a little foreword for each issue. And so he went back, and funny thing, he lost the file that had his original English version, so he had to have them retranslated from the Spanish back. But then, kind of like Adam Bessignotti did from his old, our old friend on Marvel Noise, when he used to have his bit on the show, he took the transcripts of those and wrote more into them and made them into essays and published it as his Deus Ex Comica from Adam Bessignotti. That's still a fun read, and we're all acknowledged in there too, which is always something special. But so Thomas did the same thing. He went back to his original essays and beefed them up a little bit to make them into something worthy of being published in the book. And it's so fantastic to go issue by issue and hear his thoughts and recollections and things that, you know, he recalled after rereading it, you know, 40 years later or whatever. And you guys know that I love the Conan stuff, and I have been reading some of REH's original prose again. So getting into Thomas's head, who I think is the best adapter of REH's work and certainly most comprehensive and careful about it, he delivered Conan to me as a kid, so I have to be forever thankful of that. And co-created Red Sonja, I'll stick my neck out and say. So it was really cool to read this stuff. And he's got a great way of writing about comics, right? Because he's been doing it in his alter ego fanzine for the last 20 years. So he's got a real good voice talking about it, and he talks about it all very lovingly, and hearing about Big John and the different artists, and very cool stuff. A Barbarian Life. There's three volumes. So did you guys read anything while I was gone?
Maybe. There is this guy who says his mission is just ice. I mean, justice.
Nothing but ice.
I can't look at that and not think of, like, Ice Comic Expo and everything. I'm like, for some reason. That's going to be forever with me, right, now?
Yeah, you can't
unsee. Like, after you do a bit on something like that, it's like you never forget the bit.
Right, you can't unsee that.
Yeah, so.
Well, particularly how they chose the, like, font and kerning and everything to particularly focus on the T really splits the, really has the ice sitting there. Like,
it's true. And then I love how this McNiven cover is totally like a Stephen Platt thing going on here.
And also a touch of that Finch that we experienced, now probably a decade ago, right? Or more. And what we're talking about is there's a new Moon Knight book. And don't we love Moon Knight around here on Marvel Noise? We do.
I mean, I think I've said I like Moon Knight, or I try to. Like, I think he's a great character, but sometimes I feel like I'm trying to like Moon Knight.
Well, it's trying to like what they're doing with him, right? I mean, he's had a lot. Yeah. He suffers from the, do you go with like Moon Knight that everybody loves and is already established, or do you like have a new pitch, a new angle, or whatever? And I give them credit because a couple of them have really worked, like the Mr. Knight thing,
the
hoodless Mr. Knight suit wearing version of. I thought that was a really cool one, but there have been some stinkers too. So I don't have a problem saying I love Moon Knight, but haven't liked. You know, sometimes have to struggle to like whatever the current book is.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen, but there's another Moon Knight omnibus, and it's, I don't think I'm going to be picking that one up. It's like when he came back in the early 2000s, it's like a bunch of those runs together, and I'm like, I think I'm good.
Are you sure? Because I thought the second omnibus was the rest of the original series, plus the short-lived Frank Sirocco, you know, when he came back and had, like, the Ankh things and stuff before West Coast Avengers. And then maybe a couple of limited series after that. But that's a good omnibus. Because the rest, you got to have the rest of the original Munch, Sienkiewicz, and then Kevin Nolan and Scott and Bo Hampton. And there was some good stuff there.
Well, maybe that's another. Yeah, I think that's the one.
That's
beyond,
volume two.
I think this will be beyond volume two.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah, so.
Buyer beware.
Yeah, exactly.
I think with some of these characters, you always think of them as kind of more obscure. But then when you look back on it, you realize he's fairly mainstream at this. You know, he's been in various super groups, had loads of titles and everything, but you know, part of me is always like, oh yeah, Moon Knight, that kind of like extremely not well known sort of take on a, you know, a character they could take some chances with and do interesting things, interesting art styles, narratives. But now when I look back, I'm like, he's not that rare, you know.
Yeah,
he's not like Black Widow, who barely has any titles. Just basically in modern times, like, Moon Knight has way more stuff.
People, including creators, love the character enough from his original Bronze Age roots that he survives. He's even not having a title. They throw in a limited series every once in a while. He can't stay on the shelf too long. It's Moon Knight.
Yeah. Well, I think they it's a good character, and Marvel's not going to let it go fallow, you know. You gotta turn this stuff, man. He's so close to being their Batman. So close.
Is he Batman?
More the Black Panther-y kind of, I think, is Marvel's Batman. But that,
yeah. Well, he's the rich guy that lives in the mansion with Frenchie instead of Alfred.
Yeah.
And the mooncopter instead of the Batcopter.
Remember,
I feel like on the surface he looks like Batman, but then once you get into him, he's less and less like Batman.
Batman was just one of his many faces that he wore. That was one angle that, you know what I mean? He did his Batman thing. And actually, and I'm spacing on the name, but he had a butler who had a name and was a character. It wasn't Frenchie. Frenchie was his pilot and buddy, but there was a butler, Andrew.
Jake is somewhat similar to Matches, some might say.
I think what you're trying to say is Batman ripped off all the good stuff from Moon Knight.
Well, Munch did play in both worlds,
right? If they
could
get some of those Batman sales, you know, and Sienkiewicz early on was a little Neil Adamsy back in the day.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying there isn't some. I don't blame anybody. Like, they put that bat guy in a book and it sells a billion copies. So I don't blame anyone that says I want a piece of that.
But Moon Knight was created to hunt the werewolf originally. He really wasn't, much. He didn't have all of that other baggage that was added when they gave him an ongoing series. And even before, when he had the backups in Rampaging Hulk. But now we have a new series, and there are two issues out at the time of our recording this, under Steve McNiven covers, as we said, and written by Jed, I Tie My Knot, and Windsor McKay, and Alessandro Cappuccio is the artist. Or Cappuccio. Let me say that again. Alessandro Cappuccio is the artist.
I feel like there's some other books I should know them from because this is quite good. So I'm like, there's no way like this is their first thing.
It's interesting because I really like the overall effect of the storytelling. As I'm reading through, I like the way... As I'm looking through, I like the way that the panels and pages are composed. I think it tells the story well. It's like well-paced. It's fluid. I know what's happening in each panel. But if I get stuck on any panel and start looking around, I mean, the figure work is pretty like flat and digitally looking with a lot of real thin lines and stuff. And there's a lot of odd proportions where it's like Moon Knight's kicking with a leg. But if you like... dropped that leg and looked at him standing on it, its leg is like way out of proportion with the rest of the body, and there's some weird stuff going on with his torso and abdomen at times where it's like he just looks like it's a like someone tried to ink a Gene Colan figure and like added too much like didn't know where the ribs ended, you know what I mean, that kind of stuff. But the fluidity of it, it's really nice storytelling. I think it really works, and I actually really like it.
Yeah.
They also put this little, like, greenish, bluish, out-of-focus glow around his head, and sometimes over his head, that makes, like, some of the lines out of focus, and I usually hate that, like, blur stuff, but it makes him look, you know, it's a cool effect. It makes him look supernatural, and it makes the white look glowy against the black background.
It's always weird, though. I think having the McNiven cover is the one I got. So it's such a weird you know, that's a Moon Knight we're familiar with, to have the one inside.
Sure.
I actually thought with two was my preferred. I feel like it just flowed better in two. One, I was kind of like... there were some nice images, I thought, but like you, Steve, sometimes certain things kind of just stuck out to me, and that, you're right, some parts seem very kind of in focus in that digitally way, and then the others seem, like you say, the blurring and everything. But by two, I don't know if I just got used to it or whatever, but it really took off for me. Maybe that's my anti-number one issue bias or whatever, but I would say if you're on the fence, two, for me... both in story and art,
wow,
seem to come together better.
That comes from the man who buys number ones even when they're not number ones. I just think it's nice to see the hoodless, suit-wearing Mr. Knight persona that we referred to before again. And it's a cool setup. You know, it's a cool status quo that he's got. He's like... as he says it, he's the defender of those who travel at night, right? He's kind of like the A-Team or the Equalizer, those old TV shows. It's like he's ready to help if you can, you know, find him and make your case to him. So, like, his first mission is he's got a coven of, like, Scientologist-like vampires who are part of some kind of, like, organization, faith-based organization thing. Which I thought was cool, because I do like Moon Knight returning to his dealing with nocturnal, supernatural threats roots. I mean, that's the roots of the character, right? He was made to hunt the werewolf by night, for Pete's sake. But then it's a bunch of, like, cloned vermins.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh. And then the Spider-Man's villain, I'm like, child, please. Like, we know from Marvel Noise 367 it was that Vermin was a Captain America villain who writer J.M. DeMatteis just brought over to Spider-Man when he started writing Spectacular.
Even 8-Ball shows up, which is hilarious, too.
I think he can use a little refresher and take a few new villains. I feel that sometimes some of the storylines got really, well, like maybe it's a I don't need a Bushmaster, Bushwhacker, whatever that guy Bushman. Is.
Can
take a break, and you know it's time to have new, kind of that sort of floating, low level street rogues that can show up, that you know Daredevil dip into, and Power Man and Iron Fist, and that whole kind of cap, that ground. It's a perfect one, you know. We can see Stilt Lady come back.
Well, he can fight another guy in like some kind of shining metal armor or something. That'd be all right.
Well, in this one, he meets like a new doctor who's running the neighborhood free clinic, and the guy's like a Khonshuite also. And he kind of talks smack to Moon Knight, like talks like he's doing a bad job and disrespecting his role, as if he has authority in the Khonshu cult. And he even brags that there's only one person who outranks him in the Church of Khonshu, and it isn't Moon Knight. And it turns out he's another Fist of Khonshu who's going to do the job right, which we've seen before, I think, multiple times. But and they call him Hunter's Moon, and he looks a little too close like Matt Wagner's Hunter Rose, don't you think, with the tie and the suit jacket and everything and the mask? I don't know.
With the extreme shading and sort of abstract figure work, because we have the Mr. Knight version too, I think it is pretty close. Luckily, he's physically a larger individual, which is a good way to distinguish, but I don't necessarily like the two suit-wearing dudes. Although they will make great action figures.
Yeah. I do like that they handle and address, you know, Khonshu's imprisonment and everything that happened in the recent Jason Aaron Avengers arc where he tried to remake the world and all that stuff. And I think they do a good job of acknowledging and even incorporating some of the past beats of the character who, as we've said, has had so many different iterations and stuff. But I get a sense of moving forward while still acknowledging some of the cool things about the past. Like, this feels like a little bit of the, you know, Lemire Smallwood book. It feels a little bit like a couple of those recent versions that were kind of neat. But I wouldn't be surprised if Gina or Crawley show up at the diner, too, you know? I think they have set up a status quo that allows them to dip into what they want to from Moon Knight's past iterations, which I'm going to give them a chance.
I'm two issues in. I will keep, as long as it's on the shelf when I show up, I'll buy three.
Like in the one where he's in the second issue, he's dealing with a mind controller type guy, like a Purple Man type of character. And when he goes into Moon Knight's mind and Moon Knight is acting all superior and everything, some of the dialogue was fantastic. And like, it really sold me on like, oh man, this is a pretty badass type Moon Knight. He's saying things like, mine is the tidal pull on the salt blood beating through your heart. That's some pretty awesome lunar invocation right there, man.
And I know you've touched upon this, Steve, but I wonder, have they recently changed the paper stock or something? I feel like these covers lately have been particularly even more flimsy and...
Really?
And I'm like, I almost loathe touching these. Like, I'm like, do I need to wear gloves to read these? I feel like they really warp and go nuts very quickly. And I'm like, dang it. Maybe it's because I'm reading all these older comics.
Yeah,
so I'm
right.
Just not used to the newer ones.
I don't know. I thought it's the same stock they've used for a while.
Comic book confession: I'm reading all of the new stuff digitally now. So I don't know what it feels like, Andrew.
Terrible, terrible, Steve. I'm on record. At first, I was like, who cares about the? It's the cover stock isn't cover stock, and now I'm like, you just look at these things the wrong way and they start to wrinkle and crinkle and I don't know, but Kevin, you seem shocked. So you think the covers aren't any worse than before, as far as the paper?
No, it seems like the same. Okay. Cover stock they've used for a while. I don't know. Like they, I know they used to have a little thicker, and definitely the, like with the Distinguished Competition, I can definitely tell their paper stock is way different than the Marvel stock.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just seemed like when I'm reading these things, I need to sweat less or something, or
maybe it's your climate too.
That could be too. It has been more humid here this year than normal.
And haven't they switched their distribution into their own? You know, if they're paying for distribution now, things like shaving a little bit off the weight, right, might really affect the bottom line. That's now theirs, not some other contracted out entity.
No, good point. I could see 1,800 pounds of Spawn comics, right, Kevin?
Yeah. Well, unless they're getting roped into like the global demand for paper because of how everything's crazy now.
We can make your cover this thick.
Yeah.
And no thicker.
Well, Yeah, it's probably just me being weird, but I just am...
There's always that.
I need to change my lighting or something. And also sometimes the way the color holds on the paper, too, feel... I don't know. Like I said, I've been reading so many older comics. I wonder if now just getting to the newer ones, I just have forgotten. I don't know. I'm not... No offense to the fine paper makers that supply this, but I'm not really in love with the actual physical representation of these books.
I've got one of those oversized iPads now, so it's like now that it's the same size as a comic and even bigger, it's like, and backlit and all colorful. I just doing the digital switch ended up being what was keeping my attention.
But Steve, what are you going to do without boxes of near worthless comics?
Oh, you've been in the bunker before, Andrew. You know, I've got plenty of that surrounding me.
Should we take a visit to the X world?
Well, I was wondering if you wanted to. I know I don't think Steve has gotten there yet, but you and I think both enjoyed a certain Al Ewing, Javier Rodriguez, Alvaro Lopez book.
Ooh, I love Al Ewing.
Defenders number one.
Ooh, another number one.
Yes. of course. Yeah, I've noticed some a little bit of pushback on this story.
Really? I thought it was... I love it's so colorful, and... I mean, especially coming off of Moon Knight, which has a lot of, no surprise, night scenes. Like this, it's just every color in the thing. You know, it's Doctor Strange, so it's magic. So purples and reds and greens and oranges.
I was just going to ask you, what Defenders are we talking about here? Is this Daredevil and Luke Cage, or are we... All right.
Well, no.
Oh, Steve, turn in your card.
I would say this is more along the lines of a Secret Defenders, but you still have Doctor Strange assembling a team, and part of that team is the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Classic. And you have a Hulk, sort of.
Yeah, so it's...
A Hulk-ish character?
Well, the other key part of the Defenders is sort of their initial unwillingness to team up.
Yeah.
Like, that's always a key...
Yeah.
The non-team team concept, I feel, is the traditional part. So the assembling of the team is not done quietly or happily by the members. But I've also felt... Hey, for a modern comic, a lot happens in this issue. So, you know, they get a team together. Like, I can see, I remember a time when getting a team together would be like five issues or four issues of like, okay, we got to go find where they're at, establish their status quo, establish the resistance, overcome it.
That's
and we got two guys. And then
it's like,
I think you're reading some Bendis comics.
That's who the silhouettes on the cover of the number one turn out to be. You know, that stuff.
Yeah. And so that you slowly pay it out over a couple of issues. And this was like, wham, bam, we're going to have Doctor Strange magic up, literally, his teammates in this one. And, you know, it's all classical. Like you said, we got a Hulk.
We got a Cloud.
We got a Cloud. We got a Silver Surfer.
Cloud, like, from the original end of the original Defenders run? When Demantis was writing it? Really? The naked girl with the clouds around her?
Yeah, yeah. That's why they go into, like, it's a conventional gathering of the team, but the way they go about it is so much, like, info and
just
crazy moments that it becomes a little much at times.
I was all on board. Basically, he has to magic them up, and he talks, you know, now Marvel's big on the all magic has a cost and a price and blah, 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 who cares? Just get to the fighty, fighty bits. So I like all these people getting drawn. And they really have fun. Like, there's a great double-page spread. And what I like about it is the Silver Surfer, like, all these colors are reflected against him. And like I said, it's fun for me to have a book that uses so many different colors. Because I feel like a lot of the books, you know, there's like a main hue or palette to it. And that's why I feel like, well, they're consistent with each other. It's not like it's just every color at random or whatever, but I do feel like it's a great, I don't know, it just really worked. And sometimes in comics I want crazy colors and images, and especially Doctor Strange, like I just got off a very good, you know, the Moon Knight, he's punching out bad guys and there's vampires and stuff, but it's, you know, not cosmical craziness like this.
And you forgot the last member, which is I guess introduced in that Marvel Comics 1000, the Masked Raider.
Ooh. Yeah. Which
gets you a classic hero versus hero misunderstanding type of fight.
Well, it's a Marvel comic, but they wrap that up, you know, what, three pages or something? I mean, plus it gives you a bit more fighty-fighty for your comic.
This is true. But after that, like, that history of the Marvel Universe and then Rodriguez doing this, like, totally underrated. He's got to be one of the top underrated artists. Like, this is pretty nuts.
Yeah, and like I said, for me, the colorist works great with it. Lots of not just action and composition, but facial expressions are fun. You know, a lot of the story, obviously, as Kevin said, there's a lot of exposition, so you need all the bubbles. But I think you could follow a lot, get a lot out of this if you ended up with a copy with no words. I mean, you'd be confused, but I feel like the flow of the characters works really well, and I can't always say that. Like I said, by reading their faces and things like that, I'm with Kevin. I think that the art is top-notch. Now, it is stylistic, so, you know, I guess every art is stylistic or whatever, but I feel like some people might want a more traditional. I don't know. I'm all on board. After I read this, I was like, where's issue two?
Well, where they go and what they do and who they encounter at the end of this, I'm like, oh, man.
All right.
This is going places.
You guys have sold me on this. Can't wait to read it.
Yeah, plus with the art, I think they're going to make it really over-the-toppy in a good way.
Like, yeah.
Very extreme, pedal to the metal. Like I said, they assembled the team, Steve, in one issue. When's the last time we had not some four-issue argle bargle where they got to get one guy out of jail and all that?
It
conveniently trades together.
I haven't been disappointed with the Al Ewing book yet. He's really done really great work in the Marvel Universe.
And it's nice to give Rodriguez storytelling credit, which only seems appropriate.
Definitely.
Cool, Shin. There's a new X-Men book, if we want to stick to the new number ones motif.
Which one?
There's been two issues of a new adjectiveless X-Men book. And, hey, guess what? They're superheroes again.
And it's pretty awesome. I mean, Dugan does his best work on the X-Books.
You think so?
I mean, I think I've been saying that for a while, but for me, like, it just seems like that first issue just has a lot. And then they sort of do this, not a cutaway, but sort of a cutaway thing of their new headquarters in this weird treetop place with all the rooms, and I'm like, I mean, part of the fun of this is having Hoxpox artist the Raz on this too, who's pretty incredible.
He does a really nice job, and as you've said, the mutants have made a presence of themselves in New York City, building playgrounds and stuff from their friendly neighborhood treehouse. And I was curious what you would think of it, because they give you a cutaway, but instead of labeling that cutaway, they give you some, like, Cyclops is giving, I think it's Polaris, a tour, and he's mentioning the different levels and stuff, but there's no, you know, pointer arrows showing that this is where, like, the workout section is, and this is where the sleeping quarters are and stuff like that. And then on the following page, because that's a double page spread, on the following page there's a whole page of text in Hickman X-Men style that describes the whole treehouse and all of its features. And I don't know, I think with the cutaway I kind of wanted the labels with the little pointer arrows. Like, why didn't they just do that? That's so comic-y and so fun.
I feel like this is like a modern version of the cutaway. So
yeah, I don't know. Some things don't need to be modern. Some things don't need to be modernized.
Yeah, I guess so.
But it's still cool.
With all these X books, I really feel like they've taken Hickman's sort of graphical interfacing to a good level. Like, I love, look, there's 100 of these books, and I love that they give you the little head boxes to let you know which team this is.
Yes, that helps.
I feel like these interstitial text pieces are generally worth it. You know, I've not been a huge fan of them in the past because I feel like oftentimes they don't really work or integrate well. But here I feel like it's a nice balance of exposition dumping and interest, and they usually keep them pretty short. I don't know, I just feel like they found a good balance for this world, just because there is like a million different, not only mutants, but intertwining stories and books and all that. But I never feel super lost. Like, I don't always know all the characters or their status quo or whatever, but I feel like they've done a good job of, like, you can pick up one of these things at random and at least know who's in it and know what's going on in this group, as opposed to many crossovers in the old days. Let's take the 90s, where you could just grab some random X-book, and I'd have no idea, like, what was going on, or who, you know. I feel they set the table well in these things.
As long as every team had a feral character, both good and bad. But so this X-Men group is Cyclops, Jean Grey, the X-23 Wolverine, Sunfire, Polaris, and who's that guy from the old Generation X book? And that's where I was psyched that they had the little roll call page. It's Sync. That's his name.
Yeah, and if you recall, Wolverine and Sync had that interesting story in the Hickman X-Men, so I'm totally fine with this lineup.
Sync was a bathtub busy, Steve?
Everything but the kitchen. They also introduce a new villain, Kelvin Hang, who's this, like, go big and then fail and go home entrepreneur type guy who invests, like, everything into one basket, like, to colonize Mars. He's gonna, like, create these habitats, and I think he's even physically modified himself for living on Mars and stuff. And then all of a sudden the mutant thing happens where they colonize Mars, right? So he's pissed and he's gonna take revenge on them. We also get to see the X-Men fight a giant alien, like, mech monster in New York City.
But they make their, like, their own, like, Transformer.
The aesthetic design is beautiful on it. It's a very kind of 50s, but rounded corners and everything.
I thought it reminded me of a Minion from. But I did think it was a cool use of Polaris's power. Like, something we haven't seen in an X book. All form like a big Voltron, and you know what I mean? That was pretty cool. And then it's like giant kaiju fighting for a few pages. So that was fun. And again, something you don't see in an X-book. Unless they grow Lockheed really giant in one of Kitty's fairy tales or something. And then this threat was sent by another new villain, this Cordyceps Jones, who's a real talkative... I guess he's a plant or a fungus that's growing out of a skeleton in an astronaut suit.
Kind of looks like that, yeah.
And he runs Game World, which is a floating interstellar Vegas-type place who have targeted Earth to make bets on and create chaos on and eventually eliminate. And the High Evolutionary is in the background, and I always like the High Evolutionary.
He's always up to no good.
Well, he wasn't, like, really participating, though. He was just sort of watching from the shadows, but they made sure that you saw that he was there.
You kind of wonder what his game is. Like, if he'll just...
Always.
Like, take yeah, his game.
Exactly.
Like, well, is he going to, like, take over everything? Like, if they, you know, I'm not quite... Something's going to happen.
Yep.
Well, for me, he's always linked to the X-Men because of Bova and Scarlet Witch and Pietro. So I always, even though that was probably the least of his things, like he had his own annual crossover event and all that stuff, but I always think of him and Bova raising the two twins.
Yep.
So I think it's a nice return.
I always think of him as an FF guy because he... you know, made Counter-Earth there, and then Galactus came along.
And then what gets unleashed on Earth here is pretty... I was like, oh no.
Well, when issue 2 opened up with a quote from Richard Rider...
Yeah.
...about the Annihilation Wave, I was like, well, what the heck is that doing in this book? It was good. Jerry Dugan's doing a good job here, and Pepe Larraz as well. I hope that they're able to keep him on this book for a while, because...
Oh my gosh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
I'd like the continuity. I'd like to get a feeling of, like, this is what the X-Men comic is for a while.
I mean, it's great that you have your own little island, but ultimately you're on the planet Earth, so stick up for Earth, too.
Well, so it feels, while part of the whole Mutant Krakoa experiment, it feels like it's its own book and it stands on its own. I think they've done a great job of having that balance of it's part of this thing, but you can just enjoy this without necessarily reading, you know, 800 other X books.
Well, that's what happens is every once in a while the X-Men and X titles, whether it's editorially driven or character driven, they get very introspective and become their own little separate house of ideas within the main house of ideas. And I know they had the crossover with the Fantastic Four and all that sort of business and bumped uglies with the Avengers and stuff. But they, you know, they get too involved in their own thing where then all of a sudden all they're dealing with is each other. And, you know, the last time somebody did this, it was also was a big refreshing new X-Men comic, and it had the X-Men getting back into uniforms and coming out and saying, let's be astonishing, right? When Joss Whedon did it.
Yeah,
and we all said, ooh, like, the X-Men are back, this is fun. And that's what this feels like.
I feel like they did that for like one issue or something, and they never really got back to doing that in that run.
Well, let's hope they've done better here.
Yeah, they need to get all the adjectives this time, Steve. It'll be the swell X-Men.
But you know what I mean. It's the get back to let's not forget that these guys are superheroes, and that's what is fun about seeing them go off on adventures like this.
And I love how Lorna Polaris is coming down from the sky, and then she looks very cool, and she has her little drink with her too. Just little details like that I find out hilarious.
Well, also I feel like this is one where they have all powerhouse characters too.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's funny when they put the token Captain America on the squad or whatever, but this one, like, everybody here is, if not Omega, pretty close to it.
Yeah, no Hawkeye's on this team. I mean, I love Hawkeye, but... So speaking of the big events, I guess they're getting their own minis. Or at least I feel like they're the big... holding some of the big things that are going on in the universe, too. I kind of feel like it's hard to talk about the Trial of Magneto with talking about the event that causes the series to happen, and it causes a reaction in me because I'm always thinking, well, that character should come back because they're a mutant. No fault of the writer, but my brain is wired a certain way.
And is this a limited series, or was it just a one-shot that takes us to the next thing happening with this storyline in the X-Men books? And we're talking about X-Men Trial of Magneto number 1, written by Leah Williams with art by Lucas Wernick.
So this is a 5-issue
okay.
limited series, which is funny because what starts after this is Inferno, which is a 4-issue. So if I've done the math correctly, they both end at the same time.
Huh. That sounds like it's by design.
All these X books do have the handy chart in the bat, the reading order chart, because we also have the last Annihilation event going on too. So I like that. I mean, not the ones we just talked about were their own. The X-Men 1 and 2 are their own. I mean, they're part of Krakoa is for all mutants. So I like that. It must have been, there's a whiteboard somewhere in Marvel offices.
Yeah.
All these things mapped out and cross-checked and everything.
But with that in mind, and thinking of what Kevin just said about it's hard to talk about this book without talking about everything that kind of led up to this, that's what I think they did a poor job of as this issue opens. And in the first, part of this book, it's like I think they did a poor job of setting the stage. It's like this is a issue is a reaction to what events now? Like, they didn't really, I don't know, give you and I don't need just a, it could have been a simple recap page, but it also used to be done, and we used to be hit over the head with what was going on in, you know, in the comic. And for this to be a number one that's so clearly the Trial of Magneto, well, like, for what, you know? And it's, I don't know, I would have liked to have a page or two of, like, here's how we got here, and now let's take it forward.
I also feel like the characters are, like, jumping to conclusions. So it's, like, the title of the book, I'm like, that's not happening in the first issue. Like,
it's true.
It's just like, without even doing anything, it's like, well, I guess he's guilty. Set up his trial, and then he's like, what?
Is there gonna be a trial? Like, does there need to be a trial at this point? But after about 3 pages, honestly, I just trudged through the rest of the issue with glazed eyes because it's like really wordy and really light on action until Polaris and Magneto go at it for a little bit, and that's kind of fun. But I don't know. I thought this was poor pacing for a Marvel comic, and I don't know if that's from the writer or from the what they wanted to put in this, or whether this should have been a double size to have more in it or what. But it's not good pacing for a superhero comic, I thought. This could have been better for me.
Yeah, I think this does have extra pages because they go into like long, extended sequences of
They do
of examining the body and everything, and it's just like wow. And then you're like, I don't know if everyone's gonna be like accepting of what happened. I'm like, I don't know where this is exactly going or how this exactly happened or anything. So, and then you get into like the fisticuffs and everything, and then, you know,
things. I thought there were some real pretty pages in here.
There were
some particularly very nice compositions. I think I'm with you, Steve. This doesn't feel like a number one at all. It feels like connective tissue. So
yeah,
I really could have done without all this mutant CSI nonsense. I feel it adds next to nothing to have them use their powers to deduce what you can get through that a lot quicker.
Yep.
I feel like, and have this set up to be more, but like I said, I just wanted to give Wernock, some of it I just thought was really nice panel composition, images, well done, but I don't necessarily want to heap everything on the writer, because I think you may be right in that this was doled out as in we need to get the ball from here to here.
Yep.
But by making it as a number one of its own thing, it doesn't feel at all like it's its own thing. It feels like it's sandwiched in between, and as the chart tells you on the back, between X Corp 4 and Wolverine 15.
Yeah. I'll
see you next time. But yeah, right. I just liked it. And the color guy too. I really felt that, like, the vision, like they kind of Mr. Miracled him a little, but
yeah,
the really bright red, yellow, green always works for me. Like, don't mute that thing. They turn it up to 11, and I'm like, that is eye-catching. Even though he's not even the forefront character, my eyes were always drawn to him. You know, I don't know if it was a Tom King tribute, considering he's working on this character, but I'm all on board.
I also feel like this maybe is, like, partly like X Factor issue, would that be 11? Because that cast is like prominently in here.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if
they just like, repurposed.
If that book wasn't going away, if that would have been something, I don't know.
Yeah, it just like Steve said, I'm in the doesn't feel like it's its own thing, and it needs to be its own thing if you're going to have this big. They made it. They were selling it like it's this big side thing.
I expect it to grow into definitely more of its own thing and go down some different pathways.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm staying on it or not. I don't know. I got to make a decision about these X books. They're multiplying, so I was just buying whatever one was on the shelf, and now I'm like, okay, Andy, you need to pump the brakes a little. Marvel's
true.
Definitely taking advantage of your, oh, it's an X book, it ties in, let's, yeah.
One thing for Andrew.
Sure.
So, for research purposes, in quotes, we have this whole War of the Bounty Hunters thing going on with the Star Wars books. Speaking of long events, if you're going to buy like the main series and all of the tangent tie-ins flying around the, it's like all the atoms
flying
all
that
around
stuff too.
The, you know.
I mean, I'm sure I missed a few things because I'm not being strict about it, but I've got a stack, and I'm like, how did this happen?
I think we've talked about it enough. You know how it happened.
Marvel got me again.
it's a weird way that, but I mean, it's not really an event as much as it's the status quo of the Star Wars books in this time period when Han's frozen in carbonite and Boba Fett's bringing him from Cloud City to Jabba the Hutt. And this is what happened along the way. I mean, there's this little caper that's happening, but, you know, that's only kind of in one book. You know, it's for the rest of them, we know how this ends. They, you know, Leia's going to be in that the other bounty hunter's costume going to Jabba to try to free Solo, and Solo's going to be there. I mean, it's talk about getting from one place to another, but I just think they tried to put a little spit shine on it and give it a connecting banner with this war thing.
Yeah, totally a universe sort of story that's going through everything.
Well, so people love the bounty hunters. You know, they're always hot.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of the little figures and everything. Like, they're fun. And they're relatively, look, I mean, if you're a Star Wars nut, you've read it all. But if you're like me and you like Star Wars, but you haven't read every novel or whatever, it's unripe. It's a fresh territory. Like, I don't know what Forlom and Zuckuss have been up to most of the time. You know, I'm not on their Facebook page or whatever. So,
and remember, Andrew, when we first saw that movie when we were kids, you saw those bounty hunters in the lineup, and Vader walking by for like a, you know, just a few seconds there, and it's like, who are those guys? Yeah. And that one of the Star Wars Tops cards from the movie was that still, which let us like look at it for a long time. Who are those guys? Who's the that one and that one? And then when they started making them as action figures, even though they, you know, didn't really have any part in the movie, but all of a sudden we could, you know, make parts for them in our in our fantasy dramatic play. That was really cool. They were exciting because we didn't get much of them, and they looked cool, and we didn't know anything about them.
Yeah, and it was the first IG-88 was like the first real kick butt droid. Like, he came with two blasters.
Yeah,
like normally the droids were, you know, or interpreters.
If you could get him to hold that gun,
or no, those guys held the gun for him. But the point was, he was also tall. And yeah, kind of a cool design. Yeah, some of the other ones, like as a kid, like Toilet Paper Man and Zuckuss and Forlom weren't interesting, but man, a Bossk and IG-88 were my top. Probably IG-88. I was never that huge into Boba Fett, but I thought IG-88, like, what's going on with that robot? Like, I wouldn't want to face him in an alley. And same with Bossk, you know, because you see, you do get the close up on. And the guy's like, we don't need that scum. And it pans up to see the little reptile. He's kind of like, I imagine he was Star Wars' Gorn from the Star Trek.
Except he wore like a pilot's like uniform though, like which was cool. So stuff. I was like, man, he could be a pilot. That's, you know. Anyway, we're derailing, Kevin.
This is true. So I wanted to know, because I think we wanted to know. At the time of, you can roll back the tape many episodes ago, how these other issues, like this Dr. Aphra issue 11, would sort of intersect with the main series. So yeah, totally the side adventure that gets you right up to the point, I assume, from my research, in the next issue. So it like, there's going to be an event, and it's like, this is the adventure just before the event.
Right. Okay, yeah, they did that in each of the Star Wars series. They did, like, the story before the War of the Bounty Hunters thing that led you right up into it, which was cool.
You're gonna have that, like, auction type of thing going on. So it's like, oh, how does everyone get to the auction?
Yeah. How do they hear about it? What's their angle going into it, right?
Totally.
Plus, so, not just that Aphra's a cool character, but because she's created, like, she could die. Like, there's a, like you said, Steve, we know where Chewie and Leia and all them cats are going to end up, but, you know, Aphra, I didn't see her in the movie, so, you know, there's some stakes there.
So, Andrew, how much do you know about this dirge?
Not any at all.
Because apparently this Dr. Aphra issue, it's his first, I guess, appearance in the Marvel Star Wars modern stuff. I think I looked it up before. He had appeared somewhere else briefly, I think, but this is his sort of his.
I read a bunch of the Marvel stuff, but when the license went to Dark Horse, I've read very, very little of that. It's not any knock on it, it's just that coincided with a time when Andy did not have money for extra comics. As you know, the 90s were, I was cash poor, let's say. Nope. So I missed out on a lot of some of that's on the Unlimited, and I sometimes spin the wheel and read some of it.
No, the dirge, though, where he came from was that Clone Wars cartoon, not the one that was the many seasons one, but the one that Jendi Tartakovsky, is that how you say his name, did it. Remember when he did those short Clone Wars tunes? They might have even been on MTV or something, and they made a DVD or two out of them, but they ended with the adventure that started the clone when they go to fight Count Dooku in one of those first trilogy, or, you know, second trilogy movies, the prequel movies.
I can picture the art style in my head, but I couldn't tell you anything that had the Clone Wars.
It's like Samurai Jack art, like
yeah. And I like he was in that. I like the artwork, but I was not a fan of the prequels. They just didn't. And same with the Clone Wars. I mean, I'm trying the Bad Batch, but that time frame, I just have a hard time.
But I think that cartoon debuted this Dirge character and also debuted General Grievous with all his...
Oh, I thought Grievous came from the movies, but...
No, he was in that cartoon first.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
And then when they made him in the movies, I'm like, wow, how are they going to do this? And when I saw him in the movie, I was like, wow, they did a really good job considering what he looked like in the cartoon where his arms almost rolled like wheels.
Yeah, I thought that was a good character. I really like that. But those movies, I don't know, that time period. I feel like because I was a fan of the original trilogy.
Sure. I get it. I was there with you.
The way they projected the Jedis, I think that time period, the Jedi should have been much more in disrepute. Like, it's hard for me to believe that it just fell apart in 2 years or whatever. Like, this thing that lasted thousands of years. Like, I think it should have been way further in the decay chain. You know, kind of like any empire. Like, it erodes over time. And so I feel like, along with some of the other problems, I just have a hard time being like, wait, all this stuff just went away, and then by the time Luke, 18 years later, people are like, what's a Jedi? Like... I kind of know what happened 20 years ago. You know, it wasn't like I felt it just should have been further. It seems so incredulous if you watch those new ones to be like, no one knows what a Jedi is.
So does Where Dirge Come From help you at all in embellishing what the character is, Kevin? Or
I just find it funny that you see him on the cover. I'm like, pretty cool. And then you look on the inside and it doesn't exactly match up. Like, he looks more beefy and squat on the inside. Like, he looks, I think of more like a Cylon when I see him on the cover, and then on the inside I'm like, oh, not exactly that look. So I don't know how, but you got me to buy another two issues too, but not the main series.
That's fine. You don't just buy what you like. It's a fun Dr. Aphra, like I said, there's stakes there. We don't know what happens to her. Anything could happen. I mean, point,
have this other character that I think they introduced at the beginning of the first, you know, when Marvel first got Star Wars, the Santa character, Santa Starros.
Could be.
It's kind of an interesting team up with Aphra, and they're just having fun on their own type of thing.
This whole series, last Aphra series with the new writer, the current one, Sanos has been in the whole thing. Starros, or whatever her name is.
Yeah. Starro. Star-Lord?
Hans ex-wife or whatever she is.
I mean, that's a potential for
oh, that's right, I do remember he had like his ex-wife or whatever, and then that created a lot of tension, obviously. Yeah, those the sort of unhinged nature of those old comics always appealed to me. I mean, it's hard to separate from the nostalgia of them, but just sort of the weirdness of how creatures would come and go in a kind of random way. I don't know. It made it feel like the universe was very big.
The second issue of the new Shang-Chi book was a pretty good issue. His series now is written by Gene Young Lang with art by Dyke Ruin. And there's
same artist from the mini.
Right.
Or limited series. Sorry, Steve. It's always limited series.
And Lena Yu covers. And the guest stars continue here in this series. Like, in the first issue, it was Spider-Man. And this time, for issue two, it's Captain America. The status quo for Shang-Chi now is that he and his siblings, you know, not all of who he can really trust fully, have taken over his father's widespread evil organization, and they're gonna change its ways, but not everybody's on to their new approach yet, so they can kind of use that to, you know, get in where they fit in. And this issue has Shang-Chi in an illegal auction for a cosmic cube, that he wants to take out of circulation. You know, this will be safer if it's not out there falling into somebody else's hand. But he gets outbid. Like, he thinks it all through and has all the angles covered, but he gets outbid and then has to figure out what to do. It eventually puts him at odds with Captain America, who shows up on the scene, or does it. And it's really good. The pacing of the issue is really good. The story beats, the action, and really good character moments and dialogue. It was a really solid issue. I liked this issue more than the first issue because they kind of, you know, were able to kind of go forward and not set the stage so much.
I guess I'm giving it... do you call that a second chance? I mean, it is a continuation. I got the third issue still to read. I'm going to see if that excites me, I guess. And if you like this series, then at some point we got to cover Agents of Atlas.
That's a blind spot for me. I've never read that series. I mean, I know what the deal is and everything. I read the original What If and all that. I'm up for that sometime. Let's do it. Maybe this winter.
Maybe I'll have to dip my toes. I had passed on it, but I like Yang's. I read that Shadow Hero. Sorry for a non-Marvel book, but he worked on the one about the Green Turtle, I think was the character's name.
Yeah.
It was like a Golden Age character that he rebooted. I thought that was really fun. And I have not read Superman Smashes the Clan, but I've actually listened to the radio shows. They're all over the internet because they're way out of, I think they're out of copyright, I hope, anyways. Otherwise, I just confess to a big crime. But yeah, the radio show.
He deleted it after 24 hours, right?
It was on YouTube, so I don't know who.
Oh, okay.
He wrote some of Romita Jr.'s run on Superman, too.
Yeah, he just seems like, from what I've read, and I'm no expert, but the few books of his I have looked at, I thought were really. Like you say, Steve, I've always enjoyed the pace they move. They're kind of bouncy and quick. And that's something I think that always appeals to me if you can get the story moving.
And there's the thing with using the guest stars, too, where it's like, on one hand, it could be a gimmick. I mean, I think it's all of these things at once, spoiler, this is the point I'm getting to, but like it could be more of the gimmick thing of like, you know, we want to have a guest star in each issue to make sure the series starts selling solidly, you know, at the same time as the movies coming out and all that. But then there's also the angle of, you know, Shang-Chi's been around since the 70s and knows everybody. So to have him interacting and solidifying his spot in the Marvel Universe and where he stands in his current status quo, you know, to all the other heroes, there's some storytelling interest there. But then there's also the, like, this writer is playing in the Marvel Universe, right? So it's like, hey, I want to write Spider-Man too, and you know what I mean, and Captain America. And he's done a nice job at the portrayals and the dialogue and stuff. Like I said, the character moments are really good. And I think he's doing a nice... Like, I think back to my pal Ron Mars when he left Marvel and got the Green Lantern job. He had a lot of different guest stars at the beginning of his run because it was the first time he had worked for DC and he wanted to... He was learning about the DC Universe through this character who was a new character. It was a new Green Lantern, you know, through that character's eyes. So I see it as a fun way for the writer to do more than just write the character that he was given the opportunity to write. So I think it's all those three of those things kind of working in a harmony that, you know, it doesn't come off as trite.
Well, I had to pick up, because I knew Kevin would, the new Darkhawk series, the Kyle Higgins, Ramirez, Eric Arcenega book. And Steve, I think you might have picked this one up too.
Yes, I did. Hey, it's 30 years since Darkhawk debuted, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
How could I not?
I guess the only Darkhawk... No, that's not true. I was thinking the only Darkhawk book I didn't pick up was the Sleepwalker, Sleephawk, or Dark Walker. But then I guess the loners, I guess that sort of counts. But then I read the trade, so.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of appearances.
I'm not the biggest Darkhawk guy. It was right about when I was getting out of regularly reading comics. So for me, it was a chance to get in and see what the excitement's all about. I know he's become quite popular in these last few years as a Marvel Legends figure in his, I believe, his number one book on the back issue market has appreciated some recently.
Sometimes speculators aren't that educated. So yes, when they thought he was going to be in the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, because Marvel always sticks extra figures in the wave. Yeah, the first issue did go up. I'm pretty sure it went down again. And now it's probably went up a little bit again.
But because of the anniversary, it was time for an all-new Darkhawk number one. And apparently a new Darkhawk too, right? I mean, I actually liked this new protagonist enough that they introduced here, but I actually, you know, I like Chris Powell better, the old Darkhawk.
Yeah, it's hard for me to not... There's a couple of things going on here, and it's not really entirely, like, the writer's fault. Like, one of those things is obviously I'm, like, comparing it to Radiant Black that also came out.
Okay.
Another non-Marvel book. Because I think there's a lot of, like, character time in here, much like that book. But
yes,
if you have a new character, obviously you're going to spend the time building him up, right? But the other thing is, you have basketball. I'm like, if you're not a sports guy or not into a certain thing, like, you can have something that's technically sound, like, good writing. But I feel like if you're not into what the character's into, then the writer has to be, like, extra good to make it exciting. So I can't say I was super into, like, his basketball future career. Like,
right,
I'm just
right.
Like, yeah, that's great, but, you know.
Some broad strokes for the listener at home. The new one, he is a teenager with a promising basketball career. And he has a brother that also had a promising basketball career. And so it starts with him demonstrating that prowess, and it's going to get him a scholarship to Empire U, and everything is going his way. And then it turns out that he has a malady that is now going to end his future.
I liked it how it made me think a little bit of how they did the basketball stuff in Nova number one from back in the 70s, where he was just getting pushed around the court by Mike Burley, you know? It's like, okay, we could relate to that, all of that. And it was over quick enough, even though I think he got zapped, like, right on the court, right? And was unconscious or whatever.
Didn't his girlfriend also post him up in that one, Steve?
Yeah, right. But, you know, they're pulling a 90s Ghost Rider. Right? With that formula.
Yeah.
It's like there's a new host for the familiar character, and, you know, you'll get a Johnny Blaze appearance somewhere down the line. I don't think they've forgotten about Chris. They've just put him aside to develop this new alter ego, and, you know, then we'll see more. But what do you think of the updated armor design? I like it well enough.
It's
not
funny.
Great,
because I remember seeing this cover and I'm like, oh no, because I saw the designs and then I saw this cover and I remember the designs like not matching this cover very well. And then you see the splash in here of the new design and it doesn't even follow the cover. So I'm happy to say that like the interior artist does a way better, cooler looking design, like making everything work better than the cover artist, which is weird, but
yeah,
I'm much happier now that from seeing the insides.
That's funny. The armor was never that great to begin with, right? So
it has, I don't know, sometimes I get that vibe off of it now that time has passed, that it looks classic to me, and then it kind of has...
Sure.
Like, it's looking more iconic than it did before. Which is, like, the trick of age, right?
I enjoyed the splash with the armor reveal, but I really feel the sequence before it was not well communicated, and I wasn't quite sure. Like, I'm like, oh, so he transformed, like... I don't know how you make it clear or whatever, but it paused away to get this kind of iconic splash page, but I would have preferred, I don't know, some sort of better transition. It seemed like a weird, he just kind of, I don't know, I guess that's the mystery. Why does he transform or how does it happen or whatever? But I thought to introduce us to that character, maybe figure out a way to get to your cool splash page that's a little bit clearer. Because first I'm like, wait, did the kid transform, or is this a different character?
I feel like I'm pulling a little bit of Darkhawk knowledge,
right?
Like filling in the gaps, and I also find it like echoes of the original run, where like they're in. Is it a warehouse or an abandoned like amusement park? I just remember it was something like that, and it's like they also like Chris finds the. The amulet there as well. Yep. So I'm reading this. I'm like, huh, like similar things.
When is he going to look in the mirror and take his helmet off and go, ah!
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, I'm hideous.
And then the Spider-Man next issue was teased. So I think it'll be interesting to see some interactions with characters that know the original Darkhawk, right? Like that's always fun.
Is Hobgoblin going to show up in the, at least no raptors here.
Right.
And I liked any time you have kind of techie goons, those are always fun. So there's the backstory that's going to pit ahead of the mysterious villains gang. I like their little tech guy. You know, they always got little booster packs or jet packs or things like that. Yeah. And that's always a fun way to tech out your robbers, give them a little extra plus. But as you guys know, I also don't... I feel like some of the... effects they apply to the artwork is never my bag, but maybe it's just my new glasses. I don't know.
It's kind of appropriate, I think. Like it like he's feeling out because of his conditions, so I don't think it's wildly out of place. Like,
I understand the reasoning. It just kind of always takes because it feels so. I'm applying an effect to this piece of artwork. I don't know.
I read Spider-Woman 13, which is written by Carla Pacheco with art by Pere Perez. And like the focus on character has been obvious for this book, and the dialogue's been pretty snappy. Pacheco does a good job with that, but I have not been a big fan of this new series since the new numbering. And it's the superheroing aspect of it. Like, I just wasn't into the whole discovering the sibling she never knew she had overarching story thing. Like, Spider-Woman's status quo was finally like well established. She had an interesting supporting cast, a established place in the Marvel U, who her contacts were and friends, etc. Like, why go backwards yet again to her admittedly messed up origin when moving forward seems like a really entertaining option here, but nope. They went back, and in the process, in issue 12, cut off her relationship with Roger the Porcupine, which was a bummer. Yeah.
Oh, I love that other series.
I know. So, but issue 13 starts off great, right? Like, with that mega arc behind, they can finally move forward now, right? Almost. Spider-Woman here is attacked in her home, and a data disk with info regarding her origins from the last issue gets stolen. So she chases, fighting the thief along the way, and during her pursuit, she's like fighting along, and the disk is changing hands to another superpowered person, and then she's having, you know, it's just a big long chase, the issue, but it leads to a very entertaining face-off with Lady Bullseye. When she first sees Lady Bullseye, and they fought back in an issue of Secret Avengers way back when, and she sees Lady Bullseye, and she says, "New costume? I almost didn't recognize you without, you know, a boob hanging out." Like, the dialogue is good. The action is well-paced. The banter's fun. But on the last page, it all goes back to the brother she never knew she had. And it's like, here we go again. And I guess he must have been Pacheco's pitch for the series, because it's all about that.
Yeah, seems like that's what the long-term plan is.
But still a very fun issue. Issue 13 was fun. I mean, they're up in a... they're fighting, like, hanging off of the side of a jet airliner plane, and it's pretty cool.
I think I only read the first issue of that series. You know what book did its job?
Tell me.
The Free Comic Book Day, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, The Avengers, also featuring Hulk.
Agreed, that was a good one.
I mean, I'm already down for The Avengers, but it was more the Hulk one. Because Immortal Hulk, like, you don't want to come after, like, a great run like that. Like, you know, it's just like, that's just not the job you want.
Right.
So, and then I'm like looking at the solicits for the new series, and I'm like, quality creators, and I'm like, I guess they'll order it, but I'm like, I need some kind of thing to like push me further in that direction.
Yeah,
get me more comfortable.
You need to get excited.
The story in here made me more interested.
It's Donnie Cates and Ryan Ottley, and we get to see what the Hulk is going to be like, right? He's chatty, and he's smart, and he's... Andrew, you'll like it. It's really colorful.
I hope so, because I decided to go in the way back nostalgia machine and ordered a print subscription to it from Marvel Comics themselves.
Nice.
They offer very steep discounts, and I used to get them as a kid. And I know the comic books are going to be folded, spindled, and mutilated,
no,
but I don't
mailed
really...
Mailed flat, enough said.
You haven't seen my post office box, Steve. It's going to get folded and spindled, but they're pretty steep discount. I think it came to just under $2.50 an issue, and I just wanted that thrill of going to the post office box and getting a comic. What's weird, they run it through Midtown, which I didn't know until I got it.
Huh.
But it's not coming out of the Mary Marvel offices anymore or whatever, but I don't care. It's a cheap price. I'll take a flyer on 12 issues. When it gets canceled after 10, I'm sure they'll transfer it to Dakota North Fights Power Pack or whatever book they're trying to get out of the office.
Well, in this,
I want to see more of Andrew's Marvel Universe.
Although this Hulk Free Comic Book Day did have him throwing a train at AIM agents like twice.
Yeah, and then you have MODOK.
But I haven't been. I didn't do Free Comic Book Day this year, boys. So it'll have to be a surprise. But memory serve, is this a lot of new content, or is it going to be repackaged into other issues?
No, this was all new stuff. You know, getting excited for the new launch, and the status quo looks... well, it's just interesting because he states his objective, the Hulk does. It's to get some gear to help him, like, leave Earth forever. Which, hasn't that been what all the Marvel heroes have been trying to do for decades?
I know, it's funny. I'm like, if he's doing that type of deal, that's going to be different than the previous run, so
like,
that could work. That's one way, you don't want to ignore the previous thing, but you definitely want to, like, put whatever spin on. And I'm Intelligent Hulk, I'm fine with that. Like, I like that.
But didn't he totally get ticked off at the Marvel heroes in the past when they wanted him to be off Earth, like, to the Crossroads in issue 200, and then to Planet Hulk that led to World War Hulk, right? So it's kind of fun. Like, I would think they would be lining up to buy him a one-way ticket off the planet if that was what he wanted.
Yeah, but he wants his own choice, and he wants to do it himself.
Yes.
If someone else is involved, which I suppose is still possible, then you're like, oh, no.
So he can't just go to the Fantastic Four and ask to borrow a spaceship.
Here's the pogo plane. You steal it. I'd love to see him.
You're like Luke Cage, you steal that.
I'd love to see him trying to fit into the pogo plane and like crunch, crunch, you know.
Give him one of them flying bathtubs.
The bathtub.
So then, Andrew, the other free comic book day in this issue was Avengers, and it leads up to Avengers 50. And they called this one The Tower at the Center of Everything. Yeah. And it's written by Jason Aaron with art by Iben Coelho. And it's a squad of Deathlocks working for some like interdimensional Avengers network or something, like between multiverses.
Well, once they said the tower and someone's working there, I'm like, well, I wonder who would be working there. And I turn the page and it's Deathlocks. I was like, I just had that moment. I'm like, it's Deathlocks. And then my second thought was, oh no, I wonder what Super Steve thinks about this. Like, what if this was Deathlocks' ongoing series with this concept? And I was like, would you accept this as a series?
If it was drawn that good. Like, how cool did Deathlok look, right? He looked really cool.
Yeah.
And then along with this interdimensional network of Avengers that these Deathlocks are the, like, drones for, or like the cannon fodder, there's a new Masters of Evil. And it, too, is a multiversal squad, right? Like, there's a Doctor Doom, there's a Venom, maybe Kid Thanos from Cates's Cosmic Ghost Rider story where he's raising Thanos.
Yeah, I was trying to pick out like all the things. It's like, is that like a Death Madame mask?
Or Destiny, maybe. What about Destiny?
Oh, could be.
You know, because there is a Wolverine, so they definitely have some X things. There's like a Ghost Ridered up Green Goblin. And a big bruiser version of the Crimson Dynamo that maybe he's merged with the Asgardian Destroyer armor or something?
That's what I was thinking, Destroyer, yeah.
But hey, Deathlok, so...
I know. I mean, Jason Aaron does like Deathlok.
True that. But that's a pretty good free comic book day issue.
I'll say.
Both stories were cool, and both stories made me want to read the issues that they were leading into.
And hopefully you won't have to wait a year to see a follow-up to this like last year's.
All right. And they have not put them on the Unlimited yet, which is interesting.
No. I kind of looked, because I was just like, oh, maybe like you can throw in a link or whatever. And I'm like, no, it's like, it's true free comic book day. I had to get mine online, actually, because that's the only way it was going to happen. So I was kind of lucky to be able to acquire some leftover copies. I mean, copies as in I got one copy of this and other, you know, other free comic book day things. I would buy multiple copies of a free comic book day issue.
It would be good too.
I know, Andrew, that you're in. You think I go crazy on some of the reselling stuff. So I just want to be clear.
I'm happy that the next Avengers arc looks like it's going to start with 50 rather than have the current arc end as the big issue 50, like end of. Because I'm not too happy with the current arc. I'll just quickly say that. Although the art's good by Javier Garan, it's the She-Hulk being captured by the Russians, and they brainwash her in the Black Widow Red Room by using a bunch of vampires to, like, suck her blood so that she's weak, and then they turn her into, like, an agent of Mother Russia. She's, like, a Red Winter She-Hulk. It's kind of silly. But the mission they send her on is to go kill Namor in Atlantis, which is not so silly.
Steve, we're going to retroactively go back and add a segment to Marvel Noise number 50.
Yeah, no thanks. But stick around. Maybe next episode, with it being 375, you know, sometimes that's like an anniversary and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
All right.
So I have one more thing.
Oh, good.
I believe Andrew also has this. I was pretty jazzed by this. It's Cable Reloaded with the Last Annihilation one-shot.
Yeah, I decided to pick it up. The artist is local to the area, Bob Quinn. So I used to see him at shows. And not only is a good artist, but just seems like a nice guy. Always had pleasant interactions, and he was commenting that he was the artist on this one. And it's Al Ewing and Java Tartaglia on colors for the team. And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a run. I'm not actually buying any of I might have bought some of the Last Annihilation books. I don't know. I love how all these mutant books are in one event or another with a little checklist, but I thought this stood alone on its own pretty well.
And I like how you have a big old classic Cable here.
Yeah, this is a 90s tribute Cable with lots of pouches and a big gun.
Well, he needs to put bullets, ammo, in those pouches.
So have you been reading the other books in this series? Not obviously Cable specifically, but the lead-in was in Guardians of the Galaxy and Sword and all that stuff.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy is basically the book where it's all happening. And then because of where Sword is positioned as a concept, they sort of have to be involved on some level. And then everything else is just like tie-ins or read what you want to read it, pretty much. But yeah, it's like your instead of your pop-out event, you call this a pop-in event? Huh? Eh?
Well, it worked. Like I said, I think it also works just as reading this book on its own. Like, it's a complete enough story. But clearly, you know, they're referencing the things before. They have the little paragraph, like all the mutant books, that lovely little roster that I like, so I know who's in this. The only character I am not aware of was WizKid and Korra.
Yeah, they're both from either Sword or X-Men. And X-Men Swords, I guess, technically. And just with the first page, like they go into Cable's like, hey, yeah, I'm in my base of operations here. The Gray Malkin too. And I'm like, yes! Like, referencing like classic Cable stuff, but not being like super like not just a retro flashback-a-thon type of thing. But he does have some stuff from his classic adult grizzled old Cable time.
Yeah, I also felt a callback. I remember the character vaguely because I had started reading before. That whole like kind of drill sergeant running the team aspect I felt was very much in like the tactical on the battlefield commander persona was very much in effect.
And he would always do the body slide by one or whatever.
Yeah. And so there's a little bit of wrangling with Brand, you know, about who's kind of the alpha dog, but they got to send Cable in on a, you know, suicide style Dirty Dozen mission.
Yeah, so I wasn't really never digging on the kid Cable, and then you get Cable back here and everything just feels right. Of course, great creative team too, so I mean, they're not watching it. And then they get to this planet. I don't know if we're gonna say what it was, but that's another sort of world that people would know. But I laughed that something happens to Cable's arm, and I totally got the vibe of when Captain America had to replace his shield with a holographic shield.
But in the modern world, all this stuff has AI. In the old days, it might be possessed by some mystical force or whatever to give it a personality. But here, you've got the battle tactical AI.
All right. I think I started this episode by mentioning Conan, so I'm going to bookend and finish with the current issue of Conan the Barbarian, issue number 23. I know you guys are dying to hear what I think about it. written by Jim Zub, with art by Corey Smith, And inkers are Roberto Poggi and Orin Jr. This is the, at least Zub and Smith are the ongoing creative team now.
Until 25.
Oh, really? And then is it going to change?
I think his run ends at 25.
Ooh. You've given me hope. This is part five of a not memorable Land of the Lotus arc as Conan visits the Hyborian Orient, Katai, and wears pants and robes with sashes and stuff. But this issue 23, it's a simple escape plot. Like, Conan makes a run for it and gets chased by samurai and ninjas through his what's basically like a modern, well, feudal Japanese palace and garden, which is modern compared to the Hyborian age. Oh, and the boss fight is this impossibly big samurai with a flaming energy sword, and Conan is horribly, irreversibly burned by this flaming sword over about like a fifth of his body, like his shoulder and his back and his arm. These are huge lifelong scar patches, and I'm like, has this creative team read any Conan chronologies? Like, and then at the end, he doesn't even beat this guy. He gets saved by Master Shifu at the end, like a total deus ex machina. It's, the issue was a fun romp, just not Conan-esque, and didn't seem to take place in a Conan-esque world. Like, he puts pants on and sails off in a boat by himself into the sunset at the end, like a one-man crew.
Did the laser swordsman turn out to be a robot, Steve?
It might as well have been. Uh-huh. Might as well have been. I look forward
to Lee Kung the Thunderer.
I look forward to another Conan book or a changing creative team. And I'm really into the Conan lately. I've been reading all of the old stuff, the original prose, some of the original chronologies and stuff, and trying to wrap my head around what I enjoy about the character and the character's life as portrayed. It's very frustrating. Marvel got the license back and they really wowed us the first year and really fell asleep at the wheel since.
Well, yeah, if you don't mind a little salty language, Steve, you might hear about some other Conan books being published on a certain rival podcast. It's Indie Comic Book Noise. Yep. We're talking about
I've read that stuff,
the other
too.
Conan books.
Yep, The Cimmerian.
I think issue 25 is also issue 300, and it has a bunch of different creators.
Nice.
But I also believe the next Conan is King Conan.
Mm. Yes, I saw King Conan.
Yum. I love King
announced
Conan.
On the social meds.
All right, that is another episode of Marvel Noise. It's good to be back in the driver's seat here and getting back to a routine and reading some comics. And we're going to be getting into fall and the Halloween season soon, so we'll be reading some appropriate material. Looking forward to it. So until Shang-Chi has no more chi to give, make mine Marvel. Later.
Until he becomes Iron Fist.
Ooh, Iron Fist chi is just floating around too, isn't it? Waiting to be harvested.
Stand a little straighter, walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, go forever trader, we can show you how to, and when will you be then? You belong to the Merry Marvel Marching Society. March along to the song of the Merry Marvel Marching Society. If you growl, if you groan with the dour, sour outlook, if you howl, if you moan, you can lose your sour crust, but keeping trim and in step with the vim and the step of the Merry Marvel. Be ambitious.
Speak a little wiser.
Try to be judicious.
Be a good advisor.
Never ever vicious.
And where will you be then?
face front. Lift your head. You're on the winning team.
You belong, you belong, you belong, you belong to the Merry Marble Marching Society. March along, march along, march along to the song of the Merry Marble Marching Society. If you growl, if you groan, and your score is nearly zero, do not howl, do not moan, you can be a superhero marching right along to the fighting song of the Merry Marble Marching Society. Stand a little straighter, walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, go forever greater, we can show you how to.